would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Lubin-Wanderhar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Sear?
Here. And if you would please stand, we have Chris Bent from Calvary Chapel for our invocation.
So let's pray. Heavenly Father, we come before you humbled because of what is about to occur here with decisions being made to affect the city. And so we pray, Lord, that you'd be present here. We invite you here to lead us and guide us so the decisions made would be good for the citizens as well as the city. And Lord, I just don't want to get political at all, but I just want to take a moment of silence for what happened down in Florida at that school. And we pray, Lord, for your protection on not just CUNA, but the rest of our nation against such future attacks. So again, we're grateful and thankful that we get to have this opportunity in Jesus' name. Amen.
I hope you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Thank you, Pastor Bent. First item on the agenda is the consent agenda.
There's nothing. I move we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as presented. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Lubin-Wanderhar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Did you hear from Diane? Okay, we'll move past that community reports until she gets here. So the first item up is a public hearing, consideration to approve 17-0N-AN, an annexation. Troy?
Kiersey's going to present first before staff.
Okay.
Ladies first. Good evening. My name is Kiersey Graven with KM Engineering, 9233 West State Street in Boise. I'm here tonight on behalf of the property owner of 2030 West CUNA Road, who's Mr. Tim Egg. He's also here this evening. The subject property is just about 40 acres. It's located on the north side of CUNA Road, about a quarter mile west of 10 mile. It's currently zoned RUT in Ada County, but it is contiguous to city limits on the north and then across CUNA Road at the southeast corner. The comprehensive plan for this area calls for medium-density residential, which, as you know, is, you know, R4, R6, R8. Our proposal is for the R8 zone, which is in compliance with the comp plan. There are some R4 and some R6 subdivisions in the general area, nothing immediately contiguous, but we do feel like this is a really great opportunity to get some little higher density, which we know the market is really after at this moment in time. We do have a preliminary lot layout in the works. We haven't finalized anything yet. We wanted to kind of get your feedback on the zoning before we got too much further, but we do have a preliminary layout in the works, and we do expect that we'll submit that in the next couple of months. We had a positive meeting with PNZ last month. They came back with a favorable recommendation for the R8 zone and the annexation, and I think at that meeting there were a couple of questions about sewer capacity. Those concerns have since been addressed, to my knowledge, and Mr. Eck can speak to that more directly should you have questions on that. Other than that, this is a pretty straightforward application, so I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Kirsten? None at this time. Thank you. Troy, did you want to add on? Watch that chair on the end. Jump out and get you.
That hurts my one feeling. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, just for the record, Troy Buchanan, Planner 3, Keto Planning and Zoning Department, 751 West 4th Street. The application before you tonight 1709-AN is an annexation for the former Burza property. That's who used to own it now. NSTAR Development owns it. The applicant's here tonight with his representative. Just to keep the council apprised of everything that's going on, this did go before Planning and Zoning Commission, and they did forward a recommendation of approval. Tonight it's for your decision for approval or conditional approval or denial. Everything's been assembled for your reading pleasure. All of the noticing procedures have been followed to hold the public hearing for tonight. The application before you tonight is just for annexation of approximately 39.48 acres into the city limits of CUNA with an R8 zone, which does complement and match the comprehensive plan map, which the city council did approve a number of years ago. At this point in time, they're just seeking annexation. You heard the applicant. They do have a plan that's in the works, but it's not something that's come forward yet. After this application, depending on the outcome, then they will submit what they've been working on. The site is located near the northwest corner of 10 Mile and CUNA Roads. This project does have frontage along CUNA Road, and there might be a need for a mid-mile collector on the west side of the property, as the CUNA master street map does indicate that there should be something there, at least to some degree. The site does touch the city limits on its north line, and as such, it does qualify for annexation because the applicant has submitted a request for annexation into the city. The applicant, at the time of preliminary plat public hearings, will then be responsible for bringing the city and all of the other public utilities to the site and through. This project will likely include multiple phases of the project because it's 40 acres in size. Staff has worked very well with the applicant and also their representative to get the information before you tonight. Staff finds that this application is in concert with the comprehensive plan goals and also the comprehensive plan map. And we look forward to seeing this project being presented in a preliminary plat phase in the future. And staff will stand for any questions that you might have.
Questions for Troy? None at this time? Okay. Thank you. So this is a public hearing. Did anybody sign up to testify in this matter? Is there anyone who wished to sign up who has not done so yet? Okay.
To give him a little break.
Let me see who we have. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing portion of this case, and Tim Gordon, you will have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Tim Gordon, 1206 North Black Cat, CUNA, Idaho. Mine will be short and sweet. I have the property adjacent to this, and I support this application. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
Move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And did you want to rebut Tim's statements? I'll just have you sign in if you would. You can just take it back with you. You got a pen with you?
I think it took longer for Tim to walk up here than he spoke.
It did.
Thank God he didn't stumble.
Good evening, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tim Eck, 6152 West Half Moon Lane, Ely, Idaho. I'm the applicant. Not really much to rebut, but I just thought I'd take the podium to see if you had any questions for me that I could answer.
Questions for Tim?
Go for it.
Could I have the floor?
You may.
Tim, how many houses do you think per acre you're going to put on an R8?
Our preliminary layout is about five.
Five?
We're trying to get a little more density out there. Trying to do a little more affordable product because it's south of the tracks. And that's what the layout is, right about 5 acres.
Okay. Thank you.
The R8 provides us a much more favorable dimensional standards than, say, R4. So if we need some narrower lots, we can get it in without having to, you know, reach outside of the box to make it work.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Another question? Okay.
Thank you.
We had a motion to close. Did we vote on that yet?
Yes.
We did.
We? Yeah, we did.
All right.
And I think the motion was made, and I think Greg seconded it, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't remember if we voted. Okay. Question is rightfully before council.
I guess if I speak, I'll keep everybody awake here. So, I don't know the last time we had an R8 that I can remember. Maybe there has been one recently, but I don't know if that side of town is ready for an R8. Our infrastructure isn't ready. The fire department's not ready. The train tracks, to me, prevent that kind of traffic. I don't think Cuna Road is ready for that kind of traffic. I just have mixed emotions about an R8. Although Tim has been very good to the city, this is, I think, the first time you've brought an R8 in front of us for quite a while, if at all. I just have mixed emotions, Tim, about that side of town having an R8 at... That's just my feelings, Council.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I guess, were you going to say anything? In some ways, I feel like I personally have to defer to the other entities that have chimed in, and I know Planning and Zoning approved this unanimously. So I don't know. I mean, we haven't had service issues with regard to like emergency services or anything like that yet. So I don't know. Yeah.
I just have mixed emotions. Everything over there are R4, and now we're going to an R8. I just don't think that side of town is ready yet for that much traffic on Cuna Road to begin with. We've got a charter school in the vicinity. The sidewalks are not adequate for that type of development right now.
We have approved a multifamily housing complex south of the tracks within the last year.
We have?
Yeah, it was the one on School Street. Yeah, the one though.
Yeah, and even that one, I had mixed emotions. I think everybody's aware of that on that one. That's fine. I just don't think that side of the railroad track is ready for that big of a density in a small area like 40 acres. So,
so Bob, would you want to speak a little bit about our infrastructure and where we're at with that out there?
Mayor and Council, for the record, Bob Bachman, City County Public Works Director. You might have saw my comments in there where I recommended from a public works standpoint R4 instead of R8 due to the, we do have some sewer issues with capacity at the 10-mile lift station. Since I made that recommendation, we have moved forward with some improvements on getting that system to be more viable moving forward. It's going to be a little bit of a long process to really figure out exactly what it's going to take to open up more capacity, but we are working on it. We do have some positive solutions in mind. However, I did make the recommendation because that's at the time how I felt what was best for the city. I do think if Mr. Eck was to stick around 5, it would help. Definitely don't want R8 over there, but if he's going to put 5 per acre, it would definitely help the situation. But we do have with this development, it puts us approximately 91 EDUs short on capacity on the south side of the tracks. Basically what that means is when the Orchard Street lift station, that's one of the reasons why we're building the Orchard Street lift station, and we made a few changes to that which will relieve some of that capacity issue on 10 mile, but that's quite honestly still about October-ish before that'll be done, but that'll free up about 200 EDUs out of 10 mile and help the situation. But we do have a problem at the 10-mile lift station moving forward beyond this development. So,
does the 91 short include the 200 you're talking about?
No, it does not.
Okay.
It does include the IRSA 40, but it does not include the modifications that the Orchard Street lift station will provide, which will free up about 200. So that and within another... we have another project we're working on to free up even more. If that works, then you know it'll free up even more capacity. But as of right now, if we were to build out everything that we have committed, we would be 91 short.
Okay.
I have a question, Mayor. Is everything south of the tracks going to 10 mile out there or going to the lagoons?
Yes, for the most part.
Nothing is going north?
Not as of right now.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Sorry, I have one thing for Bob. You mentioned since you wrote this, there have been some solutions that have been discussed and that sort of thing. Can you talk any more about that?
So when I first took the Public Works job in May, the Orchard Street lift station had already been started into the design process. Recently, we have made a change to that design that will free up some capacity at 10 mile.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the key to it. Is the original design when I took over was that Orchard would pump into 10 mile, which creates an even more of a deficit. And we come up with an idea to separate the two, and which will right the day one will take 200 EDUs out of 10 mile. So that's where we're coming up with the math on that. And there is other things we're trying to do with infrastructure we already own that if we can get that infrastructure to work, we'll free up even more room. So there's basically a force main that runs up 10 mile and out to the lagoons that hasn't been ran in quite some time. We're going to try to re-energize that line and see how that works. If that works, then it'll free up even more room.
So given all of that, is your recommendation the same as it was in the letter then of no more than R4, or do you feel better about a higher number now? Or
I stand behind my recommendation other than the fact that we can work with R5. When it was presented to me for comment, it was R8. I didn't know the density that he was coming in with. So the only thing we knew was 8 houses per acre. So to help alleviate some of that stress, that's the information I had to go on, and that's the recommendation that we felt strongly about.
Okay.
I do think 5 per acre is a lot better than 8, obviously. So it does help the situation to have it at 5.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor, was there anything in here from Ada County Highway District on Kenna Road?
Yeah.
I must have missed it. What page was that on?
210 of the entire packet, 21 of 52 of the tab.
Do you know when they proposed to widen 10 Mile?
I don't know exactly. I mean, I think that kind of comes with development, so.
They're not on a 10 or 20 year or 5 year projection?
ACHD here.
It walks, maybe it talks. Here we go.
David Parker at ACHD. Mayor Steer, Councilman Cardoza, at this point, 10 miles south of the creek, we don't have in our CIP or our 5-year work plan any plans to widen at this point. That being said, it will be driven by development.
Okay. Nothing on the charts in the near future, 10 years?
No, there's nothing on the charts in the near future.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Warren, did you?
Yeah, I guess just something that came to mind. If we're requesting an R8, but we're only looking at maybe 5 per acre as a preliminary, what's the benefit of approving an R8 as opposed to an R6 or even an R4? Like, why, if we're looking at a 5 per acre only, why are we looking to approve an R8, Tim? If you wouldn't mind, would that be okay?
Yeah, you can go ahead and answer.
Again, Tim Mack, 6152 West Half Moon Lane. I'm the applicant. You have dimensional standards within each zoning, lot width, lot square footage, all of this, and it varies. And the lower the density, the more restrictive it gets. As an example, in an R4, you'd have to design a perfect box development to meet R4 and meet those dimensional standards. And what we're trying to do is, we just ran the numbers. We're actually like 5.13 lots per acre with our current layout. And that's what we're going to submit. We're looking for the R8 just to get the more relaxed dimensional standards. So if we're really trying to put diversity in our lots, in our plats, bigger lots and smaller lots. And if we want to go into an area and sneak in a couple of 50-foot wide lots, we want to be able to do it and comply with the dimensional standards. We're not really interested in trying to take big chunks and make 4,500 square foot lots out of them, but we might sneak a 4,500 square footer in occasionally so we can have a scatter of more affordable houses in our plats versus having a whole plat of 4,500 square foot lots or one big corner of 4,500 square foot lots that will be looked down upon by the other side of the plat. We'd rather just kind of sprinkle them around a little bit. So the R8 is really for the dimensional standards, not for the density. R6, quite frankly, would probably work fine even with the dimensional standards, but we thought we'd start with the R8.
Okay.
Is R6 acceptable to you then, if that was something that we wanted to approve instead? Okay.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Bob, is R6 okay with you, or would you still prefer some sort of note that we're approving R6 for dimensional standards, but the understanding is that we'll have a density of no more than our 5.13 per roughly in order to help with sewer? Right.
Honestly, once he submits at a 5.13, he's mandated to do that. So if that's how he submits it at 5, then R6, R8 really at that point is
immaterial.
It's the same number of houses. If he's saying he'll do it at 5.13, we pretty much hold him to that.
Yeah, and that works for your concerns, addresses your concerns?
It's definitely better than more dense.
Oh, of course. But, I mean, does it – I thought your testimony was your memo said R4, you're probably fine with the density of 5 per – is 5.13 from your perspective going to overtax the system to the point where you would not advise approving it, or is that –
No, I would not advise that. I think at 5.13 we will be all right.
Okay. Rhodes, question. If we wanted to make sure we were at go, I know that Tim has indicated, Mr. Eck has indicated an intention to submit at 5.13. If we wanted to make that a condition of approval, would we just do that now, or is that something more that we would address whenever the plat comes to us? If it's not at that rate, we deal with it then.
We can do it as a condition of approval now at the 5.13.
It's 5.2, does that, is that? Bob? I'm playing let's make a deal here.
I think I'm fine with that.
Okay. I'm gonna say we will do it, I'm just, trying to get us all on the same page. Did you have something else, Warren? I didn't mean to.
No, that answers it. I think I'm right alongside there with Richard, just that concern of adding to the south side of the tracks right now with those potential things. But Bob definitely had eased some of the utility questions. But when you look at the road and stuff, it's still just a slight concern for me as well, and the traffic and the crossings and the school right there. So. Just mixed.
Yeah, I think anything south of the tracks until we get an overpass is going to be problematical, at least at some point. So we don't know exactly when that overpass is going to happen, but I think that's also why houses and lots on the south side of the track cost less money, too. Okay, anything further?
Sorry, I'm scrolling. Okay. Well, based on my review of the packet and the presentations, it does sound like the request substantially conforms with the comprehensive plan. As I noted previously, Planning and Zoning Commission did also forward a recommendation of approval. Mr. Eck noted an intent to have kind of a mixture of lot sizes and home sizes, which also is something that's in our comp plan, and I appreciate not having it not being an intent to have a subdivision with all like very uniform sizes or and lot sizes and all that. I think we could certainly use more of that type of variety. I know that there's been some concern raised about it being near a school, but I actually think that's also a benefit in terms of walkability and that sort of thing. So it appears to me that it also conforms with Idaho State Code. So I move we apologies, I just lost my spot. I move we approve case number 17098N with the conditions of approval listed in the packet. Also noting that we are changing the density request from an R8 to an R6. And with the notation that the applicant has agreed to a density, an actual density of no more than 5.2 units per acre, even though it's an R6 zoning.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Well, I guess I will be the tiebreaker on that. I think it sounds like we've worked to a reasonable solution, so I will vote aye on that. So that motion will carry.
That's why you get paid the big bucks.
That takes us back to community reports and requests. Allenbaugh House. We have Diana Lasciando to present for this. So I asked Diana to come back. I think the city of Puna doesn't do a lot to help with homelessness and drug and alcohol abuse and that type of thing right now, and I think this is a good opportunity for us to kind of get our feet into that because CUNA does benefit by this. So, Diana, I'll let you have the floor.
Okay. Well, before we get that fully up, I'm here as the Director of Community Partnerships for the City of Boise, but also in my capacity as the Chair for the Professional Resource Committee for Allenbaugh House, which we lovingly call the Group of Worker Bees. I will note that last week I did declare my candidacy for Ada County Commission. However, I want to make sure you're aware that is completely separate from what I'm discussing today.
It's coming.
Okay, so I'll speed through the beginning. I just wanted to make sure we went back to some of the facts that we reviewed a few months ago, but please feel free to pause me with any questions, but being respectful of your time, I want to go relatively quickly. There we go. Okay, so some brief history. Before the establishment of Allenbaugh House, there really was no place for a person without access to health insurance to receive detox or crisis mental health services, that is, other than the jail or the emergency room. And those are really not ideal locations for those types of services, most especially because they are expensive. So in 2005, a group was convened, finally culminating 5 years later, with the construction and implementation of Allenbaugh House. It is a partnership between Idaho Health and Welfare, Ada County, the City of Boise, the City of Meridian, and very recently, City of Eagle and Garden City. St. Luke's and St. Alphonsus are also financial partners. The Boise City Ada County Housing Authority actually owns the building and maintains it. Terry Riley Health Services is the operator of the facility. So it's a very unique partnership that really brings a number of different entities together under an agreement called the Joint Powers Agreement. So all of those entities functionally serve as the governing board of Allenbaugh House. Am I pointing the right way? Or should I be pointing to? Maybe you can just move it. Okay. So very quickly, what Allenbaugh House provides are detox and mental health services. Meaning a place for you to go to, frankly, sober up or detox from other types of substances or address a crisis mental health situation. It's a 5 to 6 day stay, typically, hopefully culminating in you being able to transfer out into a more appropriate situation. I will note that approximately 75% of the people who are guests at Allenbaugh House are what one might call dual disordered, so meaning they have some form of mental health issue, plus some form of substance misuse. So just a few more data points. Those were the client admissions in 2016. One thing to note, and I just had this conversation with Terry Riley last week, over the past 5 years, they have seen a real increase in polysubstance abuse. So multiple types of abuse and sometimes using one form to combat coming off another form. So that's kind of difficult for Terry Riley to categorize, which may not be reflected in these numbers. So this was up until really just this past year. This was the budget. As you can see, about half of it coming from health and welfare, followed by Ada County, City of Boise. St. Al's and St. Luke's. And later in the presentation, we'll go to where we are today. So here's kind of the key difference we discussed earlier. If you were to go over to Al's and Luke's and ask them on average what it costs for someone to stay the night at the hospital, it's approximately $1,500 a night. In contrast, at Alamo House, they're able to provide that treatment at $250 a day. So you'll remember we reviewed my stellar Excel math skills, where we're looking at our client admissions, the per-client savings, and multiplying that to see what our community savings potentially are of about $5.8 million. So just to kind of flip back, when somebody goes to the hospital and they don't have the ability to pay, they don't have health insurance, and then they don't have assets, typically those costs then get sent over to the Ada County Indigent Fund, meaning we're all paying for it through our property taxes. After about $11,000, it gets kicked up over to the state CAT fund, where we're paying for it through our income tax. So as of today, these are the requests for FY18 for the original partners. And then you'll note that we have asked Garden City and Eagle to come on board, which they agreed to do. Now, I believe you may remember that I confessed there was no particular magic into figuring out the numbers, other than what we did was we took a multiplier of each community's census in 2016. So, we basically multiplied 0.68 times your community population and came up with a number. There's a lot of different ways to try and get at this. All were imperfect, frankly, so that's where we landed. Mayor Steer asked me to kind of make it real for CUNA. So since Alamba's inception, 134 people have been identified as CUNA residents. That doesn't necessarily account for people who may have ended up experiencing homelessness, in which case they usually end up in Boise and their last known address is a shelter. So I wanted to tie in an additional piece of information that Mayor Steer saw during the Treasure Valley Partnership meeting, and there's increased conversations around the nationwide opioid epidemic and how that is affecting our community. So this is actually a house in CUNA. I don't remember the particular address, but what ended up happening is that an iPad got stolen out of a car in the North End in Boise. Using the Find Your iPad app, Boise PD traced it to this house. They then set up an operation because they saw increased movement going into this house and figured out that something nefarious was going on there. And this is what they found inside. So somewhat recently, children had been living in the house up really until 3 weeks prior that police entered the house. Children were living there until they were taken by health and welfare. Had turned into what's called a trap house. So people were cycling in and out, both dealing and using opioids. And just to, in case you don't know what I'm referring to when I say opioid, it could be pills, but it also could be patches. It could be fentanyl patches. Or what we're seeing more often now, because the state and hospitals have really cracked down on prescriptions, people are now turning to heroin because they're already addicted. So any type of opiate is under that term, opioid. Just some more pictures from that particular house, and those are syringes, and they're about five times the number of large apple cider bins of those. So these are Boise stats. You'd have to work with your police chief to figure out what they were for you. But you can see the dramatic increase in the opiate-related deaths. So these are the deaths that we have. We have confirmed 87. The coroner's office is reviewing all of the final numbers from 2017, but we project it to be around 96, if not over 100. This might be a little bit more difficult to see, but wanted to show you the charges Up top are the charges just for Boise related to opiates. Below, you'll see the jail and what they're actually treating people for, excuse me. So we've had a 60% increase in just a few years. So with that, you can see if I can flip back. maybe not. I know Mayor Steer invited me back here today to talk about the request in front of CUNA. The joint powers entity of Allenbaugh House does hope you'll consider being a partner in this effort. In some ways, it's not about the money. It certainly is helpful, but really more about the seat at the table to help work on these issues. So we hope that you'll consider it, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions.
Do you accept patients under the age of 18?
No.
Okay.
So it is an adult-only facility.
Okay.
Is it opiate-specific, or is this open up to all sorts of dependent issues?
All sorts of substance abuse. I just wanted to particularly tie it to that conversation that's going on right now.
Yeah, that was one of the key points that I saw was the basically the explosion in the problem with the opioids, and kind of started out as it looked like they were doubling each year, and then now all of a sudden we're at 100 in 5 years from one, and there are actually cities across the country that have to rent refrigerated trailers to put bodies in because the coroners can't keep up. So it's a real problem, and I think a lot of times the state of Idaho kind of gets behind on some of these things, and I would certainly hate to see that we sit back and don't do anything about it. And you know, they do take care of alcoholism and all type of other problems. And a lot of times some of these are college students or football players that have a knee injury, and some of these drugs only take 5 days to get addicted to. So if they're on an extended pain medication to get through a surgery, they can be on those for a month or two, and they kind of need some help from there. So I think it's just a big problem that we really need to get our feet into and do our part to help take care of all of this. So,
did I hear you correctly? The actual contribution amount is somewhat flexible. It's more about the partnership.
Certainly, I mean, it's not really my place to tell you how much to contribute. Last summer, the Ada County Commissioners in particular asked the group of worker bees to come up with some sort of formula that would make sense for additional cities to participate. I've looked at a number of different ways to kind of slice that.
Yeah.
So that's what we came up with to try and make it consistent.
I guess one question I have for you, sure. In figuring out your formula, did you look at all at CUNA's, I think, the youngest city in the state based on percent of population that's under the age of 18? That's why I'd asked that question. I think I want to say it's around 33 to 36%, I think, of our population is under the age of 18. So I was just wondering if that, like, if percentage of population in the targeted range that might use the services was considered at all, or if it was just more based on the census data population?
It wasn't. It was purely based on census data.
Okay.
Information. I will tell you, if we were to go back and apply that to the communities who are currently in, the city of Boise is oversubscribed, so we are paying $1.35 for every person in our community.
Okay.
On par with Ada County's contribution. But we're not planning to step back from our commitment.
I appreciate that.
No, and I agree. I think that's great. But when you look at, you know, just strictly census population as an example, Garden City's got almost five times the amount of people involved in the program. And so basing it strictly on census, like CUNA itself, not having nearly the population that can utilize it being as young as we are. I don't know. Might be worth revisiting looking at that, but no, I think it's great.
And, you know, I think that's a really appropriate conversation for you all to have. Again, as a staff person, we just tried to come up with something consistent.
You got to start somewhere.
But, you know, there's something to be looked at there, really different ways to slice it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure there's 100 different ways you could come up with. So I appreciate the presentation. I think what you guys do is very important. So thank you.
Yeah, and then so an additional way I looked at it, too, was the number of cases from CUNA and then divided that by the potential partnership amount that we would put in there, and I think it came up around $84 per case that we're adding into that pot. So
you know, one thing that, and you may want to have a conversation with your police chief, but what really struck me in particular, especially as the sort of new wave of opiates, you know, police officers want to arrest bad guys. That's what they want to do. They don't necessarily get into that to be sort of touchy-feely. When our law enforcement came to us, they came to us and said, we need to double the beds at Alamo House. And I said, whoa, hold up. You know, I'm trying to keep this all together as it currently stands, so appreciate that. But really the message that they were trying to get across was, we cannot enforce our way out of this problem. We're arresting the same people over and over and over again, and they're telling us they want to quit, and they don't have a way to do it. So that was very telling for me, because that's not a social service provider or, you know, a counselor. That's law enforcement.
One final question. Is the ask for FY18, or is this something we would include in our budget for next year, or both?
Ideally, it would be for FY18. We're trying to cover our bases for this year. Costs are increasing, just supply and demand for nursing care. It's a very competitive environment to hire nurses. So to retain the medical staff that they had to retain, Terry Riley did need to increase some things, and this is after 4 years of not increasing their budget request, so they've really been able to really extend a lot of community partnerships to maintain the budget where it was, but it just couldn't stand anymore. So ideally, FY18, that said, this is all voluntary, so recognizing that you have budgetary conversations to have.
So, yeah, my recommendation is to go ahead and approve this out of contingency fund for this year and then include it into our budgeting process for next year so that we can get on board and help make sure that Alan Baugh is as successful as possible.
Okay. I see your figures for Eagle, CUNA, Star, and Garden City. What are the figures for Boise and Meridian? Why weren't they included?
I can go back and pull those for you if you'd like. We were already in the partnership, so this is the presentation I put together for the potential additional partners. Okay. But certainly can go.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It does have the proposed FY18 funding for Boise and Meridian. Two slides prior, if you can go back to. So Boise is at $288,000.
And I'll note there's not necessarily any rhyme or reason as to why St. Alphonsus is paying more than St. Luke's, so that's something I would hope to address.
Thank you so much for coming out, and we really appreciate your time and your effort.
Thank you. And good luck with your running.
Oh, well, some people might say I'm crazy, so.
Are you sure you know what you're getting into there?
I'm sure going to find out.
So I don't know if council is willing to motion to spend some money out of contingency fund to help fund this. That would be my preference. And one thing we've been working on a lot at the Treasure Valley Partnership is another way with this is that we work really hard at prosecuting gang members and drug dealers and that type of thing federally so that it helps relieve the cost from Idaho taxpayers, and also they get a little stiffer fines that way and penalties and a little more jail time. So we are working from the other end of that to kind of help pick up these drug dealers and that, but I certainly would like to see the city of CUNA step up and help with this part at least.
I tend to agree with you, Joe, especially noting how much less it costs for somebody to get services here than in the hospital when there's no real reason for them to be in the hospital. I think overarchingly, any amount we spend will actually be a tax savings in the grander scheme of things. I know that our population is at least a couple thousand higher than the 2016 number. And I also like round numbers. So I would move that we approve an expenditure of $12,000 from the contingency fund for the Alamo House for FY18.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded from contingency fund fund Allenbaugh House for the amount of $12,000 for FY 2018. Is there any further discussion?
Mayor?
Yes.
I have no objection to the motion. I just want to remind the council that preventative maintenance is usually cheaper. For every officer we put on, it costs us about $84,000 a year. So if we could avoid just one officer, we've paid for this house 4 years in advance. So.
Okay. Any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Diana, thank you. Oh, good. Okay.
Thank you.
That brings us to item 7A, information only financial requests of operation YTD month ending January 31, 2018. John Marsh.
Yes, good evening, everybody. For the record, John Marsh. As I did prior month, I'm not going to get into any detail unless you'd like to save time. There's nothing out of the ordinary except we actually don't have any general fund contingency money. So just kidding. Got your attention, though.
That's not
fine. So we'd have to go back and take the $12,000 back.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. Nothing out of the ordinary. Everything's humming along as planned thus far. And does anybody have any questions in particular?
Just for the record, for all of the people I'm confident listen to these meetings and review the minutes and stuff, because it's a lot of numbers and can seem a little bit confusing, could you just do like super high level, like we're looking good, we're doing better than projected, just something very.
Sure. Would you like to go? Would you like me to cover the four major funds?
Sure. Okay. Whatever you. I just know that sometimes it's kind of hard to digest this data if you're not familiar with it, and so just for anybody who might be curious.
Okay. Okay. So what I'll do is I will follow down along those pages that you have in your packet on the electronic packet. And they're numbered. The clerk's office has numbered them, so I will refer to the page number and where I'm discussing. I'll make it real high level and then stop me if you have any questions.
Perfect. Yeah, I don't want you to spend a bunch of time. I appreciate it.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on the bottom line, which is our net revenues versus our net expenditures, netting those two together. And there's two things that I put there. One is total net or total revenue net of total expenditures, and then operating revenue net of operating expenditures. And the only distinction between those two, total revenue includes our carry forward monies that we budgeted, and our total revenues, our total expenditures include our contingency monies, which are spent from those carryover funds. So they're not really operating monies. So when I strip those two numbers out of there, we look at true operations. How are we really doing right now, this year, this month, and up to this point, without our carryover monies that we have in our bank account, if you will. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to focus on just our operating numbers.
Perfect.
So for the general fund, our operating revenue net of operating expenditures thus far through January is basically I'll talk in terms of private sector. It's a loss of $322,927. Don't be alarmed. The reason for that is property tax revenues were generally like this every year. Property tax revenues arrive, the vast share of them arrive first of February, right in the first part of February. So we received a check just over $1.2 million at the first of February. It's not reflected in the January financials. So that'll turn around, and that's a normal thing. So nothing to be alarmed with there. Any questions on the general fund?
No, okay. Thank you.
Okay, next one I'll move on to is the water fund. Water fund, thus far, the operating revenues net of operating expenditures is positive, so basically a net income of $535,575. That's very good. That's typical. What we're experiencing now is most of the budgeted capital projects, which is where the vast share of those dollars go during the course of the year, have not started yet. So basically what we're getting is operating revenues from the use of the potable water system, with netted against our operating expenditures. So nothing's out of the ordinary there. Any questions? Okay. And then the sewer fund, same thing. Operating revenue net of operating expenditures, $581,630. Again, that's likened to a net income. Same situations going on there, just our typical revenues coming in, and we're not necessarily spending much in capital improvements at this point in time. Any questions? And then the last major fund is the irrigation fund, and it is same boat, operating revenue net of operating expenditures, essentially a net income of $231,163. Same situation is going on there. Most of our capital projects and a lot of our outflows for electricity consumption don't necessarily start until after April 15, so nothing out of the ordinary there. And revenues in the irrigation are kind of they're linear for 9 months of the year, so October through July, and then the remainder of the months in the fiscal year are dead because we stop billing at that point in time until October. So any questions on the irrigation fund?
No.
Okay. I will leave it at those three major funds. Those make up the predominant share of the city's budget. And any other questions at all on any of the information that I can shed a little light on for you?
Nope. I appreciate you doing it for the record. Did you have anything more?
Real quick, John, yeah. Is it fair to say the government-wide, the very bottom, is just kind of the overall then viewpoint of the city of Kuna?
Yeah, it is, yes. And you've got some things in there that really are in that, the agency fund. Agency fund really is just monies that we have in trust that the city doesn't own, and so they're not really reflected in a revenue or expenditure. So these are like performance bonds and things of that nature. So those affect that a little bit. So, and those numbers are in here, but I just want to make sure you know what that means. But yeah, bottom line is government wide represents everything in the budget.
So, and John, I don't want to alarm you any, but Bank of the Cascades does not exist anymore.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing. Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, what you're referring to is the name of the bank that we have listed in our cash allocation report. Actually, it started as Farmers and Merchant State Bank, and in our system, it's still labeled as Farmers and Merchant State Bank, but it comes across as Bank of the Cascades, which is now First Interstate.
First Interstate, so, yeah.
So we're trying to get that changed. We just got the check stop changed, so slowly making progress.
Any other questions?
John, I was daydreaming here for a few minutes. What is the agency fund?
Oh, agency fund. So it's really a trust fund. So agency fund, what it is, it's separated from everything else because it's monies the city has in its possession that does not belong to the city. So it's trust. So, and let me give you an example. We have performance bonds for certain projects, certain projects that are going on in the city improvements. We require certain things to be paid to the city to guarantee certain things happen. And when those things are done, then we return that money. So it's really not our money.
Okay.
It would become our money if we ended up at a point where they have not done what they needed to do, and we've exercised our legal right to hold that money and possibly take that money in as a windfall.
Okay. Thank you, John.
You bet. Any other questions?
Questions for John?
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Anytime. Ask questions. Shoot. If anybody has any questions in the meantime, there's always a lot of information, very confusing, very detailed. Send me an email anytime. I'll be glad to address it, and then we'll address that at a city council meeting as well, so everybody's aware of the same question and answer.
Just for moving forward, because I think a little explanation is useful for people who aren't super familiar with this, maybe like quarterly we could have you just do like the high level. I mean, I appreciate you can keep including monthly if you want, but does that sound like that way you don't have to talk, say the same stuff every month, but does that seem like that might work?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. In fact, what I generally like to do is the further we get into the year, the more inclined I am to kind of highlight certain things.
Yeah.
The first couple of months of the year really are kind of, you know, they're really kind of a waste of breath. but yeah, absolutely. I'll start doing that for sure.
Perfect. Thank you.
Richard, yeah.
John, I've got one more question on the agency fund. Looks like we have roughly 385 as projected annual budget. Why did that jump up so high when it's been consistently around 70, 60? Are we having a lot of completion bonds that are being held in reserve?
Yeah, so what that represents, I think we have, at the time that those numbers were put in there, I think we had 4 performance bonds on the books that we had received actually cash performance bonds for. Typically, they're an irrevocable standby letter of credit issued by a banking institution, but we have none of those anymore. All of them are a cash performance bond, which is better. So we're sitting on that cash, and those are the monies that we had at the time of budgeting, and some of them have since been processed out and remitted back to those that are secured by that bond.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further? Thank you, John. Item 8A is ordinances. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-05. In the agenda, it actually shows 2018-02, but that is a typo. And it is in the packet correctly as ordinance number 2018-05. This is an ordinance of the City Council for CUNA, Idaho, amending Title 7, Chapter 3, Section 17, and providing an effective date. This has to do with the grassy area right behind the City Hall. It's a very popular place for people to come and exercise and train their dogs. They do it quite frequently, and frankly, we don't ever have any trouble with that, so Bobby suggested that we just make it legal and change that part in the ordinance. And it is actually quite entertaining some days to watch him out there. Some people are really good at the way they train their dogs, and some of them are just kind of wild. It's always fun, and they have a good time with it, and there never seem to be any problems. So that's why this came about. So
appreciate the explanation. It's a pretty minor change, and it's being more permissive, so I don't think we need 3 readings. So I therefore move we waive 3 readings of Ordinance 2018-05.
Second. Motion's made and seconded to waive the 3 readings of Ordinance 2018-05. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2018-05.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance 2018-05. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2018-05.
Second. Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance 2018-05. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries, and that will become law upon publication.
Mayor?
Yes.
I have one question. Why isn't the dog park on here to be lease free in the enclosure?
The dog park's actually at Sandy Creek Park.
Oh, okay.
So it falls underneath that one.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Item 8B, consideration to approve ordinance number 2017-29A, an ordinance amending ordinance 2017-29, annexing certain real property into the city of Cuna, Idaho, to wit parcel number S14192231151. Current owner is SDN LLC. This property is situated in the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the city of Cuna, Idaho, establishing the zoning classification of said real properties, directing that copies of this ordinance be filed as provided by law, and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2017-29A.
Second. Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance 2017-29A. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Move we approve Ordinance 2017-29A.
Second. Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance number 2017-29A. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Sorry, I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2017-29A.
Second. Motion's made and seconded to approve a summary publication of Ordinance 2017-29A. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries, and that will become law upon publication. Mayor and council announcements. I didn't have anything really special to talk about this time. If anything council wants to.
Chris reminded me, I had totally forgotten. I don't know why it wasn't on my calendar because I'm usually good about adding it, but we have a Board of Correction next time, so we're starting at 5:30.
Correct. Board of Corrections is at the next council meeting. And then I think tentatively, if council's okay, we will start at 5:30 on the second meeting of March for photos. No?
I will try to make that happen. We can take me last, right?
Sure.
If needed, okay.
Sure, and we can do the group. Or we can roll it over to May, too. We don't have a timeline. It's your timeline, so.
Hopefully, as long as I can go last if needed, that should be fine. I have an arbitration in Boise, so it's okay. Just a matter of, like, what time we wrap up for the day.
Okay.
We'll talk good, and you'll get it done quicker.
So 5:30 start the next two meetings. Check.
Okay. Anybody else have anything? If not, we need a motion to adjourn to an executive session.
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74206A and B for the purpose of discussing personnel matters. Is there a second?
Second. Motion's made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes. And that motion carries. And we just need Richard and Chris, I think, for this one. Thank you all.